So yesterday we got into the topic about what makes the month of March so great. And in addition to St. Patty's Day and Shamrock Shakes, my number one reason was, of course, March Madness. And as I was trying to put into words, I said, if you think about it, the years change, the faces change, the teams change, the coaches change, yet March Madness and the NCAA tournament, it never disappoints. Favorites or upsets, top-ranked teams or underdogs, every year we get stories and we get memories. And no better person to tell us a story than the award-winning author John Feinstein, who joins us now on the Hadid Rug Cleaning Hotline. His new book, The Back Roads to March, The Unsung, Unheralded, and Unknown Heroes of a College Basketball Season, out and available as of yesterday. And John joining us now. Mr. Feinstein, how are you, sir?
Mr. McElroy, good to talk to you as always.
Conference tournaments, the tournament right now, going into the Masters, a new book. Is there a happier time in the calendar year for John Feinstein?
Well, it's a happy time. It's also a hectic time, especially with a new book out, because trying to get the word out about the book, obviously. And this one is a little different than some others I've written, but similar to others still, because there aren't going to be a lot of instantly recognizable names in the book. I mean, Jim Calhoun, I went and saw his Division III team play in researching this book, because he's still coaching. And by the way, his team, St. Joseph's of Connecticut, went 26-2 this year, which is in D3, which is kind of remarkable. And other, you know, star names will float in and out of the book. But the real focus are, as you said, players and coaches and teams that aren't in the spotlight very often. Now, I did spend time with Loyola of Chicago, their coach Porter Moser, and some of the kids who played on their Final Four team the year before. I did spend time with Ryan Odom and his UMBC team a year after their shocking upset of Virginia in the NCAA tournament, and to write about how your life changes when all of a sudden you go from relative obscurity to being in the national spotlight the way those guys did, and how it changed. Clayton Custer, who's Loyola's best player, said, you know, at the start of last year, we were playing in front of 2,000 people at home. We lost a game here and there, and people yawned. Now every game is sold out, and if somebody misses an open shot, you could hear an audible gasp. And it's national news when we lose to somebody. And your life does change when that happens, often forever, but certainly for the next season. And I went looking for stories that people haven't really written about very much. Certainly they haven't gotten much attention on television. And I got to tell you, Wes, you know me pretty well. There's nothing I love more than that sort of story. So I had a great time doing that book.
Well, see, that's what I think is the great part about this book, is because come March, and you know how this works, March, you get the people that turn on college basketball for the first time, and they'll fall in love with a team, they'll fall in love with a story, but then it's kind of like, okay, what's the next story? And we forget maybe about that story that was so great, and you're now telling us the stories of, okay, what made that story, and where did that story go from there?
Yeah, that's exactly, that's a great description. And I'll give you an example of a team that's not that far from where you're sitting right now. Longwood hired, which is 61 miles west of Richmond, I actually Google mapped it, hired Griff Aldrich last season. And Griff is a guy who played D3 ball at Hampton Sydney, went to Virginia Law School, became a very successful lawyer in Houston, was making close to seven figures, married, three kids, and at the age of 42, decided, you know what, I always wanted to coach basketball. He was going to go work for Dave Odom as a grad assistant when he graduated from Hampton Sydney. He and Ryan Odom had been roommates, and Ryan had talked to his dad about Griff, and he was going to go work for him at Wake Forest. And when Dave Odom found out that he'd been accepted to Virginia Law School, he said, the job offer's withdrawn. You're going to law school. And when he graduated from law school, he still wanted to coach, but he had $100,000 in loans to pay back. So when he got offered a job at this Houston law firm, he basically had to take it. And 20 years later, he called Ryan after Ryan got the UMBC job and said, you know, I still want to coach. And Ryan said, well, I can hire you as my director of basketball operations and pay you $32,000 a year, which was about an $800,000 a year drop in salary. He took it, was there for 2 years, was part of the team that upset Virginia. And the president of Longwood is also a UVA law school grad. So So when he went looking for a coach 2 years ago, he was intrigued by Griff. He hired Griff. And they had a good year this year. They rallied to finish 9-9 in the Big South. So they'll be the fourth seed in the tournament when it starts tomorrow. And I went down to spend a day with Griff, and they were playing High Point. And High Point, as you probably know, is now coached by Tubby Smith. Tubby Smith of Kentucky national championship team, Georgia, Memphis, Minnesota, Texas Tech. And the afternoon of the game, we were sitting there having some coffee, and Griff said, "What a coaching matchup. Tubby Smith, 606 wins in a national championship against me with 12 wins." And he said, "My team better be a lot better than his team tonight." And during that game, as I was sitting there watching, my wife texts me, and she says, "I forget where you are. What time will you be home tonight?" And I said, "I'm in Farmville, Virginia. I'll be home about midnight." She texts back and says, "You're having an affair. There's no such place as Farmville, Virginia." So the title of that chapter is, "Yes, Christine, there is a Farmville." And there are stories like that throughout the book. I went looking for guys. Very few people who follow college hoops know who Griff Aldrich is, but I would make the case he's as good a story as anybody.
Well, this is great. It's all part of John Feinstein's new book, The Back Roads to March, The Unsung, Unheralded, and Unknown Heroes of College Basketball. John joining us now here on Sports Radio 910 The Fan and 105.1 FM. And there's a lot of parts about Virginia here. You write about Chris Mooney and Richmond and kind of the lineage of coaches at Richmond. You write about VCU and how special of a place the Siegel Center is. You also write about a certain blizzard that you drove into one time to get down to the Siegel Center.
Yeah, I still blame Ed McLaughlin for that one. Because I called him, I'd heard there was going to be snow. I was going to a VCU George Washington game. And I called Eddie and I said, "How's the weather looking down there?" And he goes, "Oh, it's fine. There's no snow here yet. It's going to be fine. Come on down." So I drove down. By the time I got to the Siegel Center, there's 5 inches of snow on the ground.
I remember
that. And amazingly,
well.
Nobody failed to show up that night. It wasn't an announced sellout. You know, what's the sellout streak at now? 152, I think.
I think you're right.
And the place was packed. People got in their cars in the snow and got to the Siegel Center. And by the time I left the building, of course, there were like 10 inches of snow on the ground. So my normal hour and 45-minute drive back to D.C. took about 4 hours. And someday I might forgive Ed for that. But you know, I've spent a lot of great nights in the Siegel Center doing the TV for VCU the last few years. I'm as baffled as you about what's going on with this team. But the other funny story about Richmond that's in the book dates back to when Dick Tarrant was the coach. And they played Syracuse in the first round of the tournament in 1991. They were 15. Syracuse was a 2. At that point, no 15 had beaten a 2 since they'd gone to 64 teams in 1985. And I was working for the short-lived National Sports Daily at that point, and the great Frank DeFord had asked me to write a piece the day of the tournament opened. Name the 8 best bench coaches in the tournament and the 8 worst. Well, picking the best wasn't that hard. I picked Bob Knight first, and I picked Dick Tarrant second. And then I had the usual suspects, Dean Smith, Mike Krzyzewski, people like that. Picking bad bench coaches was harder, but I went with Jim Boeheim. Because I felt like their teams played kind of out of control in big games, and even though they'd been to a national championship game in 87, and so I picked Boeheim. And on the practice day up in College Park, Boeheim walks over to me and says, "You know nothing about basketball. How can you say I'm not a good coach? Look at my record." And I semi-defended myself. He was right, of course. But the next night, Richmond upsets Syracuse. First 15 to ever win a game. And Boeheim walks into the press conference. It's after midnight because it was one of those 10 o'clock NCAA tournament games. Walks over to me, points his finger in my face. "What really upsets me about this is now there are going to be people who think you know something about college basketball. And you still don't." And you know what? He was right. Jim Boeheim's a great coach. Of all the many things I've written through the years, that's one of the dumbest. But it certainly made me look good that night when Richmond pulled the upset.
He is John Feinstein. John, look, I know you got to go because you're doing a media tour here, but you don't give it away. But with all the stories, and you obviously go into a project with the idea of, okay, there's stories that I want to write about, I want to expand on. But was there a story you didn't know about? Was there one that popped up in your research and you said, "Ooh, look, I got myself a new chapter"?
Well, certainly I didn't realize that Griff's story in Longwood would be as much fun as it was. But I went and spent a day at the Big South Tournament, which was held last year in Buies Creek, North Carolina. And if you've never been to Campbell University, you got to go. It's a lovely little campus. Everybody gets their picture taken with the Campbell Camel that sits outside the arena, which is a very cool thing. And Chris Clemens is one of those great, was one of those great. He's graduated now with a 3.2 GPA, by the way. But he was one of those kids. He grew up in Raleigh. He wanted to play for North Carolina. If he couldn't play for North Carolina, he wanted to play somewhere in the ACC. Nobody in the ACC recruited him because he's 5'9". And nobody recruited him really at all. And Kevin McGean, who was the coach at Campbell, saw him play in a summer league. He'd just gotten a job, and he told his assistants, this is the guy we got to get, even though he's only 5'9". He's going to be the cornerstone of our program. And fortunately for him, nobody came in, no big-time school came in to try to recruit him. Chris Clemens went to Campbell and graduated last year as the second leading scorer in the history of the NCAA, behind only Pete Maravich, and was the leading scorer in the country last year. Great kid. Just a terrific kid. Spent time after every game signing autographs for little kids. He said, I think they like me because they don't have to look up that far to get my autograph because he's only 5'9". And that was as fun a day as I had during the season. And there was also a kid named Bjorn Broman who played at Winthrop, also Big South. And Bjorn Broman was the last basket of his career when they lost in the first round that day to Charleston Southern was his 1,000th point. 4 years, college basketball, 1,000 points, played on an NCAA tournament team. And in the last 2 minutes of that game, when they had no chance to win, they lost by 14. He's diving on the floor for loose balls. He's still making back cuts. That's how he got his last basket. And to me, he summed up what this book was. Somebody who he'll never play in the NBA, but he loved playing basketball. He got to play with his brother for 2 years at Winthrop and didn't want it to end. None of them wanted to end, Wes. They love doing what they do. They know it's going to end. They understand. Broman talked about how every last made him stop and think. The last first practice, the last first game, the last first conference game, and then finally his last game. And those are the kids to me who make college basketball not just fun, but they give college basketball a soul in the way that I'm not knocking the kids who are one and dones. I would do the same thing if I was as good as them. I'd go get the money as soon as I can. So I'm not knocking any of them. But I loved watching kids like this play all last season, watching coaches who loved coaching them. And the book is summed up. I know I said this three times already, but there's a sign. Have you been to the Palestra?
I have not, and I'm ashamed to admit it.
You're a basketball fan. It's got to be on your bucket list. And when you walk into the Palestra and you walk down the concourse to the right, there's a little plaque, and the plaque says, to win the game is great, to play the game is greater, but to love the game is the greatest of all. Now, that's impossibly corny, right? But it's so cool. It's so cool. And every time I walk in the Palestra and walk down the ramp to that floor, usually holding a Philadelphia pretzel, I get a chill. Because that place is what college basketball is at its very best. And I love going to games there. And I loved this book because it was a joyride for me.
John, we love story time on this show, but there is no better storyteller than you. John Feinstein's new book is out. Go get it. The Back Roads to March, the unsung, unheralded, and unknown heroes of a college basketball season. John, thanks so much, and we'll do it again closer to the Masters.
Wes, thanks for having me, as always.
All guests appearing on the Hadid Rug Cleaning Hotline. No, seriously, there is no better storyteller than John Feinstein, and lucky that he is a friend and a friend of this show. So go check that book out. That's the cool part is we get to this point of March where we will get into a school like Loyola Chicago or UMBC, or for people, I mean, we're obviously here. We experienced 2011, but there were people across the country going, VC who? And people didn't understand that, wait a minute, VCU and Richmond, they're like 9 miles apart? What? Whoa. Yeah, but then it's like, hey, what's the story this spring? And we forget about those great stories. Well, John has not, and that's why the book is out now. It is The Back Roads to March, and it is out and available at all major bookstores and Amazon.com. Over break, but it's okay. It was John Feinstein, Wes McElroy on the news, Sports Radio 910 The Fan and 105.1 FM.